Good morning. It's great to see you. Thanks for fighting your way through the roadworks that were going on outside. If we'd have known, we'd have given you some warning, but we didn't, so sorry. I'm going to read from Mark chapter 5 if you want to turn there. While you're turning there, let me make a couple of announcements. Today, we are heading to Barnes Park for a picnic after the service. If you're free and able to join us, we'd love to see you there. If you haven't planned for a picnic, don't worry. There'll be plenty of spare food, so we'll find you a sandwich and some other bits to eat. But we'd love you to join us as we spend some time together. Wednesday evening, we'll be here at 7:30 to pray again. And if you're able to join us, we'd love for you to do that. And then a really sad announcement, but as a fellowship, we want to pass our condolences on to Heather and Gemma and Michael. Some of you know that Heather had a grandson who was born with some heart complications. He passed away recently at 2 years and 2 months old. Please do pray for the family. Please do remember them in prayer. It's obviously a very difficult season for them. So if you can be thinking of them, they'd thoroughly appreciate that. Mark 5 and verse 21 says, when Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him, my little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and lived. So Jesus went with him. A large crowd followed and pressed around him, and a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She'd suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had, yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, if I can just touch his clothes, I will be healed. Immediately her bleeding stopped and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once Jesus realized that power had gone out of him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, who touched my clothes? You see the people crowding against you, his disciples answered, and yet you can ask, who touched me? But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet and trembling with fear told him the whole truth. He said to her, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering. While Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. Your daughter is dead, they said. Why bother the teacher anymore? Overhearing what they said, Jesus told him, don't be afraid, just believe. He did not let anyone follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the house of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw a commotion with people crying and wailing loudly. He went in and said to them, why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep. But they laughed at him. After he put them all out, he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, Talitha cum, which means little girl, I say to you, get up. Immediately the girl stood up and began to walk around. She was 12 years old. At this they were completely astonished. He gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this and told them to give her something to eat. We looked at this passage a little while ago, for those of you who are here, and gave some consideration, I think, if I can remember rightly, to legitimate need. And if you want to find that, it'll be somewhere online. But Jairus is facing a desperate situation. His 12-year-old daughter is seriously sick. She's dying. And he recognizes he needs Jesus to intervene in this situation. So he pleads earnestly with Jesus, and Jesus agrees to go with him. But they're disrupted on the way because of the bleeding woman. And during that disruption, the message comes that his daughter has died. Why bother the teacher anymore? Literally translated, why still trouble the teacher? I don't know how I would have broached that situation. It's not news anybody wants to deliver. But I can't imagine I'd be doing it, criticizing the action they were trying to undertake for the sake of their child. There are umpteen ways to encourage the man to come home, as I can see it. Jairus, your daughter's dead. Come home, your family needs you. Jairus, your daughter's dead. Do you want to come and say farewell? Jairus, your daughter's dead. Shall we get away from these crowds and find a place to quietly grieve alone from this chaotic situation? But that's not what's said. What's said is, Jairus, your daughter's dead. Why bother the teacher anymore? And I think that's a question that's familiar to me. Why bother? That in the course of walking with God and the absence of immediate results, or the situation playing out as I would expect it to, I feel like I have the question at times. Why bother the teacher anymore? Why still bother? He's come to Jesus knowing his daughter is dying, but with a solution in mind about how this can be fixed. It's Mark 5:23. He pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." But she dies while they're on the way. And the question the messenger has is there value in continuing to pursue this thing now? I think the woman with the issue of blood has a similar problem. Of is it worth continuing to pursue this matter? It's really interesting. Mark 5 and verse 25 says there was a woman who'd been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She'd suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. The lady's been ill for 12 years. She's been working to find a solution to her illness. She spent all of her money pursuing a cure. And yet instead of getting better, she gets worse. At what point do you give up? Why still bother? And I think there's a meaningful challenge for me often when things don't play out the way I expect them to, when things don't go the way I'd hoped, when I tried something or asked Jesus to do something and it didn't quite turn out the way I was planning, why still bother the teacher? But maybe it's just me. Because I assess my circumstances and think, how does this change now? How could this possibly change now? And I want to suggest to you that faith operates in situations that suggest to you, why bother? Hebrews 11 and verse 1 says, faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen. Faith's not about an ability to accurately assess your present. It's not about looking at the circumstances in front of you and determining what is plausible. Faith's about being persuaded about what is not evident right now. That in spite of the circumstances, that in spite of what is visible to me in my present, I know. And the reality is that time and time again, I think I find myself in situations where things go differently than I expected them to. Where I've come to Jesus and I have a solution. If you would just come and do this, this is how it will go. And it goes differently. And the question I'm confronted with then is, why bother? Because that's not what I wanted to happen in this situation. And if you're not going to do what I want you to do right here and right now, then should I continue this pursuit? I want to suggest to you it's a lie from the enemy. But it will be one that you hear. That you question the value of the thing that you were pursuing because the results look differently now than you expected them to at the start. Does that make sense? I hope you're all enjoying the new massage seats we installed as the ground shakes beneath your feet. But that's the reality I find myself in times. I come to Jesus with an expectation about how Jesus will do something and what that looks like. And then he doesn't do the thing I wanted him to do, exactly how I wanted him to do it. And I wonder, was there value in the action anyway? Jesus responds directly to the situation. Don't be afraid. Just believe. It's amazing that the assumption is fear in that circumstance to me. The man's just received news his daughter is dead. He's trying to process that, and being asked the question, why bother the teacher anymore? And Jesus' response is, don't be afraid. But isn't that the reality of life? That confronted with bad news, immediately, your heart is filled with fear. It's not, don't be depressed, don't grieve, but don't be afraid. And Jesus isn't wondering what might happen in the situation. Luke 8 and verse 49 records it like this. While Jesus was still speaking, someone came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. "Your daughter is dead," he said. "Don't bother the teacher anymore." Hearing this, Jesus said to Jairus, "Don't be afraid. Just believe, and she will be healed." There's no doubt for Jesus about what happens next. There's not a wondering about what he's going to find when he faces the situation. He's already determined what happens here. But he's inviting the man not to fear. And then this staggering thing happens. They get to the house. Says, Jesus saw a commotion with people crying and wailing loudly. And he went into them and said, "Why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep." And they laughed at him. I have tried to picture this moment in my mind. I've tried to work this out. Because here's what I understand of the story. Jairus was with Jesus when Jairus got the news his daughter was dead. And Jairus and Jesus go together to Jairus' house. So there's a father arriving home to a dead daughter. And people are there and they're crying and there's a scene. But when Jesus says something that seems ridiculous, those people laugh. How ugly is that? It's so ridiculous to them that people who a moment ago were wailing in an absolute commotion about the fact that their situation, this little girl is dead, are now laughing at a man who suggests there might be some other reality to this. And let me make this observation as easily as I can. Lots of people will cry with you. Lots of people will tell you how awful your circumstances are. Lots of people will be present when you're depressed, agreeing how awful it is. Sharing your grief. Entering into your pain. But they'll never encourage your faith. They're happy to come alongside and say, there. Isn't this really bad? Isn't this awful? Isn't this such a shame? They'll wail and cry with you. But if you suggest that God might be doing something in the circumstance, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculed. The people who were meant to be there to support you are now laughing. So can I urge you, be careful about who you make space for in those moments? Because some people will cause you to fall in a heap on the floor and abandon all hope for everything. Because they're happy to cry, but they can't see any way out. And when you suggest there might be something different, actually they're not entering into that, they're laughing. And equally, I want to stir faith in people. That as I come alongside them in their moments of hopelessness and pain and grief, I want to believe God is writing a better story. That he is outworking his purpose. And I want to encourage that in people. I don't want to be the one laughing. And it's interesting to me that Mark 5 and verse 40 records that Jesus put them all out. Gentle Jesus. Kind and compassionate. Isn't making space for them. They've determined it's too late. That this man must be nuts. That he's got a totally wrong hold on the situation. But they aren't trying to gently correct him. They're laughing at him. In the midst of it. So he puts them all out. Because the reality is, it's never too late for God. It's never too late for him. And in all sorts of circumstances and situations of disappointment, of concern, where things haven't panned out just as I expected they might, my tendency is to go to the place of asking myself, why bother? Why bother? I'm amazed Heather's here this morning. I'm not sure I would have that courage. Because actually, it's really easy to ask all sorts of questions in the midst of challenging circumstances about the value and validity of something. That in my disappointment, I can write something off completely. But I have a God who is outworking his purpose, who is fulfilling his words, who makes all things work together for good, for those who love him and are called according to his purpose. And he's not waiting to find out if you think it's plausible. He's not waiting to find out if you think it's achievable right now. He hasn't stopped to ask, can you see it? He's at work. And so he walks in to a situation where a little girl is dead, and he takes hold of her hand and tells her to get up. That's it. Get up. And apparently, whatever was going on, whatever the circumstance was, whether she'd gone into some comatose state, whether she was dead, whatever happened, that in that moment she stood up. That's all it took. She stood up. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha cum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately the girl stood up and began to walk around. She was 12 years old, and at this they were completely astonished. Let me make this observation to you. I'm a big fan of God who does things immediately, who acts suddenly. Here's what I understand from Jairus' story. There's often far more of a journey to the immediately than I recognize. It would have been nice, wouldn't it, that when he fell at Jesus' feet, "My little girl's dying," that Jesus might have said what he said to the centurion. "She's okay. Your faith has healed her." That he would have sent word in that moment and immediately she would have been fine. It would have been nice, I think, to not have to deal with the tragedy in the middle of the story. I've come to Jesus to ask him to heal my daughter. My daughter's going to get better. But in the middle of this, the daughter dies. I'd like to skip the middle bit. That Jesus is going to take hold of her hand and immediately she's going to get better. I'd like that to happen as soon as I ask. I wouldn't like things to deteriorate off the back of that. I wouldn't like them to get worse. I wouldn't like things to take a downward turn in that moment. Okay, that's often not how it works. I don't get to determine how he does things or when he does things. And actually, the immediately in my circumstance might come off the back of a much longer journey than I expected to take. It's no less immediate when it happens. But sometimes when we talk about the immediacy of God working, we don't necessarily recognize the fact there's been a journey that got them to that point. See, my tendency when I've read Mark 5 has been to blame the woman with the issue of blood for Jairus' daughter dying. Right? It might just be me. But, you know, maybe if there hadn't been a distraction on the way, maybe if there hadn't been that situation play itself out, Jesus would have been there in time. I'm not sure it's true. I'm not sure it's got any real validity. But it's how I've often read the story. But the reality was there was a distraction on the way. Jesus did stop. He stopped to deal with the woman with the issue of blood. And while that's happening, Jairus gets news his daughter is dead. This isn't the plan. And the question that's asked off the back of that is, why bother the teacher anymore? Why still bother the teacher? And it's a question that I feel like at times I face. I've been praying about this for a while, God. And it doesn't seem to be getting better. In fact, at times it seems to be getting worse. Maybe I'll just stop. I've been asking you to move in this situation for a while, God, and actually nothing seems to be changing. I have brought this before you time and time again. Maybe I should stop. Why am I still bothering? I want to urge you to keep bothering him. That whether the circumstance is favorable or it gets worse, keep bothering him. He is the only one you know who knows. He is the only one you know who knows. Whatever you need, whatever happens in this circumstance, however it plays out, he is the only one who knows. And the determination I make sometimes is this hasn't gone the way I wanted to, so I'm not going to keep bothering you about this. That I hear the voice, why bother the teacher anymore? And I go, yeah, fair enough. And I go and I sit among the people who will cry with me but never encourage my faith. Who aren't pointing me back to him, but are laughing at the prospect that he might be at work in this situation. And I surround myself with people who don't point me to Jesus, but urge me to leave him alone. I want to suggest to you this morning, that's not a plan. Jesus knew Jairus' daughter would be healed. He knew the circumstances better than anybody else. That when he walked into the situation and said, she's only sleeping, it wasn't some half-hearted effort to try and make somebody feel better. He understood she was getting up again. It would have been a shame if Jairus had ran off in haste with the messenger. It would have been a shame if the words of the messenger rang in his ear and he went, look, Jesus, don't bother. I thought you would do this. And the reality is, I know there's disappointment in this room. I know there are circumstances people have been praying for years. And they're wondering, will it ever change? Should I continue to bother? I just wanted to urge you this morning, yes, that even when it seems like it's reached its end, that's no obstacle to him. That even when it seems absolutely definite and final, that when all hope is lost, then there is no way this can possibly happen. That is what he specializes in. Amen. He is the God of the impossible. He's the God who does exceedingly and abundantly more than you can begin to imagine. He's the God who astounds. And so he can take hold of a dead little girl's hand and tell it to get up, and she gets up immediately. And he doesn't call all of the haters in and say, look what I've done. You're laughing now. But he tells them, don't say anything. That's fascinating. And while you're waiting, be careful about who you let in, who you sit with in those moments, and the voices you listen to. Because God is outworking his purpose in your life. He is fulfilling his words. Everything will work together for your good. He will be glorified through your life. But it's not necessarily always obvious in certain circumstances. And there'll be some people who want to laugh at the prospect that God might be doing anything with you. Or that things might change in your situation. Or that dead things might come back to life. It's what he does. I pray that you might be confident in all of his promises to you. And that during the journey to your immediately, you wouldn't lose hope, because he is doing all that he promised. Should we stand together and worship?